every great company starts the same way, with a dream. Not a pitch deck, not a spreadsheet, but a vision. And behind every entrepreneur is the same starting point, a belief that something better is possible and the willingness to take on the risk of trying to build it. Welcome to Dreaming Big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'm a relationship manager on the Texera Lockern Group at UBS. I've spent the last decade working alongside founders across industries and stages. From ideas scribbled on napkins to companies scaling faster than anyone expected, I have seen what it really takes to turn vision into reality. What has always drawn me is not just the outcome. It is the optimism, the grit, and the ability to hold a vision long before anyone else believes in it. On Dreaming Big, I sit down with entrepreneurs to talk about where that dream started, the moments that shaped them, the pivots they did not plan, what they're building, who they're becoming, and the lives they're trying to live along the way. And so we go deep into identity, turning points, joy, and the seasons where that dream felt fragile but somehow survived. This isn't just a podcast about startups. It's about making something out of nothing, about protecting an idea long enough for it to become real, and about the courage to keep going day after day. And so whether you're building your first company, scaling your fifth, investing in a founder, or simply drawn to people who see the future before it exists, this is for you. This is Dreaming Big. And so let's dive in. Now, if you've ever felt completely lost filling out your first W-4, choosing a health insurance plan, or just generally feel like nobody gave you the manual for adulting, Genevieve built something for you. Real World is an AI-powered life management platform that's helping thousands of young adults navigate everything from taxes to healthcare to retirement savings. Today, I get to sit down with Genevieve Belair, who's the founder and CEO of Real World. She is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, Inc., and her views are her own. And here is what I love about Genevieve's story. She is a lawyer with an MBA from Georgetown. She worked at Goldman Sachs. And despite all the education and prestige, she still felt completely unprepared for the real world. And instead of just accepting that as the way things were, she decided to build something to not just solve for herself, but solve for everyone. She raised nearly $8 million from incredible investors and has truly built a category from scratch. So I'm excited to jump into it.
Genevieve, it's been so fun just watching your entire journey and knowing you for the past couple of years and really seeing you in Real World evolve. And so before we hop into it, I would love if you could just take me back to the beginning. Before Real World officially existed, you were at Georgetown, you were getting your JD and MBA simultaneously, which on its own is intense and incredible. And then you land at Goldman Sachs. On paper, you're totally crushing it. But for you, what was the moment where you realized that maybe something was missing?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. And you're too kind. I mean, it was such an amazing place to be. I loved working at Goldman. I was very lucky to have an amazing education at Georgetown, as you described. But funnily enough, the impetus for Real World and the idea actually happened the first week of my job at Goldman. So I'd like just finished all this education. I start working at like the dream job there. And I basically realized during orientation when they handed us all of the packets of paperwork for 401ks and health insurance and all that kind of stuff that I had no idea what I was doing and no idea what these forms were, how to fill them out, like how to choose the right health insurance plan, just all that life stuff kind of reared its head. And I remember distinctly, I was walking up 6th Avenue, holding like all of this paperwork, basically my second or third day in New York and sort of going through this whole journey and starting at Goldman. And I was like, this is so embarrassing. Like, I'm a lawyer, I have an MBA, I've spent all this time in school. And like, if I can't figure this stuff out, like, who can? And so I basically went online and I started looking up different resources and tools and seeing how should I fill out this paperwork? How should I understand these different accounts? And what I found was that there was a ton of information out there, but it was very disaggregated and it was very impersonalized. And there wasn't just like a front door for adulthood, like one single point of entry that could just onboard you into life in the real world, kind of tell you the stuff you didn't know, make sure you had all the educational foundational knowledge, had the documents you needed, et cetera. And I was like, that should exist because if you don't even know what you don't know, how are you possibly supposed to be successful? So that seed, honestly, literally the first week of working at Goldman was planted in my head. And then I essentially spent my like nights and weekends kind of obsessing about this space for the next year before deciding to take the leap.
It's such a relatable experience where I imagine that almost every person in their first job does get the benefits package. Yeah. And they just don't know exactly what to do or who to go to. And so it's amazing you had that problem and you were like, actually, maybe I want to go do something and solve this someday. you decided to build Real World at some point, but I know from your journey that the first version of Real World looked a little bit different than what it looks like today. So I would love for you to share a little bit more about that evolution.
Yes. Well, I feel like if you talk to probably any entrepreneur, they will tell you that it never looks the same beginning and least the end of the journey in terms of what you wanted to build. And I think at the end of the day, it's probably a good thing because at least in my experience, initially the concept, just to take you back, was to kind of solve the education problem in this space. So help people better make that transition from being a student to being in the working world and really through the lens of like the knowledge gap. So our first solution was actually called Real World Playbook. And it was a total education, like ed tech oriented company. We built a solution for colleges. And so the idea was to basically provide like the capstone curriculum you should have taken in school before you graduated. So everything from insurance to credit, debt, taxes, student loan repayment, like all of these different topics that you never cover in the classroom, and package it in a course that seniors would take before they graduated. We called it Real World Ready. And so we ended up scaling this up to almost 100 colleges across the country, and students were taking it as they were graduating. But the reality was a couple of things. The first was that this was right at the beginning of COVID, and the world was just changing kind of day by day. And what it meant to like enter the real world was also changing. And so it was just kind of this mismatch in terms of the solution that we had provided and what the market needed. And we ultimately decided we needed to go direct to consumer to really directly impact people throughout their own journey rather than partnering with schools, just because what that looked like was changing so much. But the second thing that we realized as we were sort of scaling up the solution was that what we were providing was helpful, but it was very much kind of like the foundational and base layer of what we needed to provide to make a difference in people's lives. Meaning we gave you this sort of like passive education, but really in order to make a difference, we need to help you take action on those things. Like it's great to learn about credit, but you need to understand how to check your credit score and what that means. It's great to learn about insurance, but if you don't have renter's insurance and your apartment floods, like we're not going to help you. And so the whole evolution of the product has really been to educate, organize, and ultimately like empower people to navigate these different things and sort of help them do each of those things in turn. And I'm sure we'll get to this, but the most incredible thing with AI is that we can now start to like automate a lot of these aspects of your life. And so it's not just teaching you what you need to do, it's just like doing it for you, which is pretty exciting.
That's awesome. I think that there's two things that I love about that. The first piece is there's this importance of being willing to be wrong about your initial assumptions. But for you, it wasn't that you were necessarily wrong. There was a ton of product market fit and appetite for what you were doing. But there's two pieces. There's the education and the execution piece. And you obviously now get to solve for both. What I love about what you have done is you're really creating a category of its own. I think for so many of us, we have all these different tools that solve for some of these problems. Or we, you know, go to, as we mentioned earlier, AI or ChatGPT to ask some of these questions. But there isn't a one-stop shop for a lot of these resources, and not all of them are necessarily trustworthy. There wasn't this other lifestyle management platform before you. So what is it like building something when there really is no blueprint to follow?
Yeah, it's been one of the most exciting but also challenging parts of the journey, if I'm being honest, because I remember one of the reasons I wanted to start the business, as I described, was I was looking around for the solution. It just like wasn't there. So it was like, wow, okay, so no one created this kind of one-stop shop for life that helps you navigate all these different things. And the reality is also you wouldn't even know what to, at that time, like Google search to get that solution because there wasn't a category. It wasn't like help me with adulthood or like life tasks or whatever you wanted to call it. So it was really exciting in the beginning to kind of position ourselves as like this true category creator, wide blue ocean space where we could sort of create this new product and experience. It meant that we didn't have a competitor. It meant that there wasn't this kind of like, you know, cutting like our prices to be competitive or just like, you know, going after some really small part of the market. Like the world was our oyster essentially. However, it had a lot of challenges with that as well, because if you think about building a solution that doesn't exist yet, there's not like a line item in a company's budget for it. There's not a line item in a consumer's budget for it. So you kind of have to convince them why the solution is going to help them and not just be like a better version of X that they're already are doing. And so that's kind of one thing. The second is when you're building a business, it's nice to have a playbook from somewhere else in terms of like, how do I market this? What's the best like go-to-market strategy? What's the right business model? Like who's the target consumer? How do you talk about this? And we basically had to figure out every single one of those things on our own. So it just took a lot of time to kind of like test and iterate and test and iterate. And then when it came to the investment side, pitching investors, it was like, we're this like adulting platform. And very few investors, and actually now they're starting to, but very few investors had a like adulthood, life stage, life management thesis. And so you really had to find people who could kind of see the world the way that you did to be able to say, hey, like if there's this product that just seamlessly helps you navigate these different life events and sort of day-to-day life as an adult, like this is how the world would look. So it was simultaneously, as I'm trying to describe, like really exciting and interesting because we could, it was creative, you could kind of play. But at the same time, they had some unique challenges, I think, that a lot of companies in existing verticals might not have to contend with.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Now, we talked a little bit about the evolution, but in this past year, 2025, you launched an AI-powered platform. So Talk to me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's been extraordinary, frankly. And I'm just personally spending so much time, like hours and hours a week, just learning about AI and sort of following all the updates and things that are coming out and all the sort of applications of the technology. But for what we want to do, it's truly been the missing piece for the last couple of years, providing an automated experience and kind of removing the friction and complexity around a lot of these life tasks, so to speak, providing a more personalized experience and truly providing a reason to essentially create what we call like life infrastructure for someone. That's essentially an organized way of their life data living so that you can take action on it. So what I mean by that is, you sort of described this as well, but there hasn't really been a repository for life. You can use Dropbox, you could use Google, Google Drive, whatever. A lot of people use like a manila folder that they keep all their documents and things in. But the reality is that if you don't have those aspects of your life speaking to each other, so if things about your health are not talking to things about your financial life, talking to things about your work, talking about like all of those pieces are very siloed and very sort of separate, it's not very helpful for you. And now with AI, the whole beauty of it is that it's highly contextualized. And so the more context we provide AI, the more helpful it can be for you. And so what we've basically built is like the context layer for AI and one place where all of your documentation lives, all of your finances are synced in, your reminders around everything from dentist appointments to getting your car oil changed, like all of that stuff lives in one place. And so we built this functionality called Ask Real World, which is basically similar to, a ChatGPT or Claude, except that it really is trained on your specific information that you provide. And it's trained in a way where it's purely to help you. There's nothing nefarious, like we don't sell data or anything like that. Security is a true top priority. But it just means that the information and the responses you're getting are around like your life. And so it's been amazing because years ago, when we raised our first round of funding, we'd sort of laid out this roadmap of how are we going to build this truly unique and sort of differentiated business. The whole idea was there was like multiple phases, and the phases went from like educating people, organizing all of their life information, and then the kind of like far future goal was to automate their life information, automate adulthood. And I remember at the time being like, this might be like a 10, 15 year project to kind of figure out how all these pieces move together. And all of a sudden with AI, it gets here. So it's just been a really exciting past year. And I'm so excited to see what's going to happen next.
The personalization aspect, I think, is just the most incredible piece, because previously and currently we have a lot of information that we have easy access to, but applying it to your own personal state is, I think, a really hard piece. And again, you have folders and documents in disparate places, and having one place where you can ask, hey, I'm thinking about buying a home. What should I know? They're going to be able to tell you in what state, here are the things to consider given your specific situation, or we know that you have a dog because you have pet insurance. These are the things that you should be considering. That is something that doesn't exist anywhere else. And that is so exciting and important. I love it.
Thanks. It's definitely a tall order and something we're continuing to refine every day, but the vision could not be clearer now. And finally, like the ability to execute on that vision couldn't be closer to the reality of the present.
So cool. You know, I'm sure that you have been able to see how customers use the platform. Is there a certain aspect or playbook that throughout time has been one of the most important or highly used ones?
It's interesting. It's almost always the financial piece. And it makes sense. Like when we were education company, it was learning about budgeting strategies and just how a lot of the mechanics of the financial system worked. Now that we have, a financial dashboard where you can hook in all of your accounts and build budgets and have, track your transactions and everything, that's like the number one thing that people do in the platform. And it's been interesting too, because we consider ourselves to be, you know, part fintech, part insurtech, part consumer, part whatever. But if you look across the board at the fintechs, we have a really, really high connected accounts rate compared to other fintech platforms. And I think one of the reasons is that people realize that their finances are so integral to every other aspect of their life. And so if you can sort of introduce that data point, you can have much more personalized and better experience. But that's always really been the thing. You're in this world, like, it makes sense. Every single other decision that you make, whether it's what job you work at, how you think about buying a home, how you think about even just, you know, health expenses, all of these things, it all always comes back in many ways to finance. And so that's been sort of a thorough thread throughout the whole journey.
So that's also a nice segue, because we're talking about kind of customers and personal finance, but I would love to talk about it a little bit as a founder and the financing for your own company. You've raised a great amount of money from some extraordinary investors, and I would just love to hear about how you both built some of those relationships, but also how you generally approach the fundraising process.
Yeah, well, the first to say that we've been really, really lucky with the people who we have worked with from an investor perspective. We've had lots of individual investors, like successful entrepreneurs invest in the business. We've had like larger funds and people who do it professionally invest in the business. And I think the thing that really ties all those people together is like a true belief in the mission and that something like this needs to exist in the world. And those are the best types of people to have on your cap table, because they're going to ride it out and understand the ups and the downs and the changing landscape and all the different things, because they're mission driven. And so I will say, though, it took some time to find those people, because as I was describing, we don't fit very nicely and we never really have into a specific category. So if we would speak to like the fintech oriented firms, it would be sort of one conversation, edtech firms would be another conversation. And so we really had to sort of kind of build relationships, frankly, with folks and help them understand what the world could look like if this thing existed. So that was certainly a journey. And I think that the other sort of elements of my fundraising journey from a personal perspective were our first round we raised during COVID. And so it was all online. And it was like it was actually funny. I was planning to kick off our fundraise literally the week before everything shut down in March 2020 and had like all the meetings set up. I was like flying different places, all this stuff, and then everything got canceled. And so it was a very odd time to be introducing myself and the company to all these people, because that's when you want to start building relationships and all of that. And at that time, the whole Zoom investor thing was not really normal, which now obviously it is today. So that was a sort of journey to get through. But I think the process overall was really finding people who cared about what we were doing, had sort of that long-term conviction, and then just getting them all together and kind of making it all happen.
That's amazing. And a very unique situation in terms of the early fundraising conversation. You know, when you think about just the importance of fundraising and financing for early stage companies, what would be your advice for founders who are trying to break into these networks?
So I think I came from a non-technical, non-startup, non-venture background. Like, I was basically a lawyer turned entrepreneur. I was at Goldman, as you described. And that's not really where a lot of these investors like hang out, frankly. Like, I just had almost no network in that space. And so I really spent the first like 6 months of the business, once we started getting some traction, just going to the events, like meeting people, reading what different investors were writing online, talking to other founder friends. I think that's my number one piece of advice, is talk to other founders about who's invested in them and what they think about those investors and how that experience has been, because that's the majority of where our investment came from, as founder friends, investors. So I think it's just really understanding the playing field in terms of who's out there, who do you align with? Because you also have to think about it. If you're going to build a category defining company, it's going to be a long journey, like a 10-year plus journey. And these are people who are going to be with you for that 10-year long journey. And so you want to make sure that there's not only the kind of alignment around the thesis, but also just alignment on more of a personal level as well. So those are sort of the big pieces of advice. But I think the other thing that is important to say too is not every company needs to be venture backed. Like, there's so many founders now who I've spoken with even recently, and particularly again with AI, it's gotten so much less expensive to build businesses in terms of everything from coding to content production to, I mean, literally you name it, any part of a business. I know a lot of founders who are raising a small amount of capital and then getting to profitability and or just not raising any capital at all. So I think it's worth having the conversation with yourself in terms of understanding, you know, why am I raising? Am I raising to raise, or am I raising to hit some specific goal? And then that can also help you better align with the right people to have on your cap table.
It's such great advice. And I think something that I've always really appreciated about you is your transparency and real authenticity as it pertains to both the reflections on when you were fundraising and, you know, how you were successful in doing that, but also why it may not necessarily be the path for everybody, especially in such an evolving landscape. I would love to just do a little transition into talking a bit about your team, and your team has expanded since you fundraised. You know, what do you look for when you're hiring?
There's so many talented people out there. And I think what's exciting too is there's so many talented people who want to join early stage companies, which if you think about it is kind of a crazy thought because like it's really hard. It's like a lot of hustle. You're not paid as well. Like there's a lot of risk. There's sort of a lot of different things to consider. But what I think brings the right people to the table, and what at least I look for in terms of just bringing people around the table at Real World, is commitment to the mission, certainly. Same thing as investors. You have to have people who believe in what you're trying to build, because starting a company is such a roller coaster that there's going to be great days, there's going to be really bad days. And the thing that kind of carries you through is the belief that this thing should exist, that it will exist, and like we're going to get there sort of no matter what. I think the second thing from there, though, is just aptitude and like ability to learn, ability to be adaptable. And that is something that I think in today's age is actually even more important. So people are like intellectually curious, like want to be bettering themselves and sort of improving their abilities over time, I think is huge. And I think the last thing is like there has to just be strong culture fit in terms of people you want to spend your time with, because you're going to spend a lot of time with these people. And ideally, if they're with you for the long run, like they're going to help build something really exciting and feel very much like it's their company too. And so finding people who really bring that kind of positivity and zest and enthusiasm is helpful as well.
As it relates to culture, what is your approach to both leadership and building culture?
Yeah, so I think my leadership style has changed a lot. And I will say when I started the business, I had an MBA, a lawyer, et cetera, but I didn't have a ton of management experience. Like it was really it was a learning curve for me to basically understand how to manage and grow the team and sort of figure out how to do that properly. And I think my style really evolved to being one where really looking for people who can operate independently and need guidance, but who my goal and my role as a leader is to empower them to do their jobs, not to kind of give top-down orders and all of that. And I found that the right types of people, that really works well, and it gives them space to play, to make mistakes, to make creative decisions and all of that in a way where you just get better outcomes long term. So I think really trying to find people and empower them to do their role well and give them the tools, the resources and all of that that they need is sort of the first and foremost. But I think the second piece of that from a culture perspective is like making it okay to fail. Like we have failed so many times, so many times. We've pivoted, we've done so many things, but that's okay because it's getting us to where we need to go. And I think cultures where you're not allowed to fail is where innovation just gets completely squashed. And so that's been a real core tenet, at least as I think about it, in terms of the culture, Real World, and something that's gotten us where we are today.
Fantastic. So we talked a little bit about the future, but let's talk about it. Where do you see Real World in the next 5 years?
Well, it's incredible to think about like 5 years ago, because so much of the technology, so much of what we're implementing now just would literally not have been possible then in terms of just our ability to everything we're talking about in terms of AI, like have super personalized experience. Something we're really excited about right now is all the agentic stuff that's coming down the pipeline, because imagine if we could just handle your life admin in the background and book the dentist appointment for you, like fill out the paperwork for your claims, like help you understand, schedule all of these things for you, and not be your personal assistant, but be really kind of that like burden off of your shoulders in terms of all of these life things you need to deal with. So I think that from a just pure tech perspective is what I'm very excited about, and how it will continue to be a product that just brings peace of mind and lets people focus on the important stuff in life and not kind of all of these little things in the background. But the other thing we're really excited about that we launched this year was something that we're hoping will help people really specifically navigate life events, not just the day-to-day sort of life stuff. And so we launched this thing called Life Kits, which has been in the works for like 5 years, frankly. And the whole idea is it's over 20 different life transitions or life events, everything from getting a pet to getting married to buying a house, to starting a job, to going to grad school, where there's some combination of legal, financial, health, tax, kind of like annoying life stuff you need to deal with. And we kind of have built the system or this playbook that can help you deal with everything in one place. So tell you the stuff you need to do step by step, personalized to you, help you get it done, help you save any relevant documents in real world, sync in your finances, et cetera, and just make all of those different decisions in one place. And as part of that, something I'm really excited about is that we're trying to make adulthood not just easier, but actually try and make adulting a little bit more fun. And so we're implementing this entire rewards schema. So the idea is helping you get rewarded for getting your life together. And we're partnering with some amazing companies and brands that essentially you can earn points by going to the dentist, by filling out paperwork, by checking your budget every week. And as a result, then you get access to all these amazing prizes and perks and discounts and stuff like that. So trying to really kind of flip the script from this being like, oh, adulting sucks. Now I get something that I get to, you know, reward myself with. So that's the hope. And then I think finally, you know, long term is we want to be able to provide even more solutions for our members across each of these different aspects of life. So that's figuring out how we can best create just an ecosystem of trusted, very well-designed, helpful tools to navigate life.
It's so exciting. And also just for probably anyone listening, including myself, is it's something that I know everyone can use. And so that is the piece that obviously part of being an amazing founder is partially designing for yourself and solving for your own problems. But this is certainly that at scale. And it just makes me really excited for if people haven't heard about Real World, for them to learn more about it and be able to use it themselves. And it's a little bit of life admin within a more magical way, where you not only have made it a much more seamless experience, but it's an enjoyable one too. So that's really, you're an incredibly thoughtful builder. I love it. I imagine that there are some listeners that have dreams of what they would like to do, but maybe are hesitant to take the jump. So what would be your advice to them?
I think twofold. The first is that it has never been a better time to be an entrepreneur. I mean, you could today in minutes spin up a website, an app, concept, a brand, anything that you are imagining, you can now build using these AI tools in a way that just frankly was not available to us entrepreneurs who got started a little bit earlier and could truly let you test and iterate on these ideas very risk-free. So I think there's almost no reason not to try and build a business now because it's so simple to get started and it's also so risk-free. But I think on more of like a philosophical level, in my mind, it's like, what's the worst that could happen? And what's the best that could happen when you think about these things? Like the best that could happen is you go and build an amazing business, amazing company, you change a lot of people's lives, you employ people, you sort of become a positive force in the world that didn't exist before. And the worst case is you fail and then you can try again, or you can go back to your job or go back to something new or try a different type of company. So like there's very little in my mind reason not to try and not to at least take the jump at least once.
Such good advice. Okay, I want to end with some rapid fire questions. So quick instinctive answers.
Let's do it.
What is the best advice you've ever received?
Best advice I've ever received as relates to work, I think, is to focus on the step, not the staircase. You can have these big grand visions, but you got to go like step by step and figure out like what's the first thing I need to do and then the next thing I need to do. And frankly, like I'm very much in the vision mindset space. Like that's where I like to play as opposed to kind of the minutiae and execution. But it's been a helpful grounding tool if you, again, want to build like a large category defining company. What's like the next thing that has to happen, right?
What's the first thing you do every morning?
I'm an early bird. I get up very early and I read. I have a system where I have articles I've saved, emails that have, you know, interesting newsletters, stuff like that. And I just go through for about an hour and read as much as I can.
What does living a rich life mean to you?
I think time, having time at your disposal to do the things you want, freedom of how you spend your time, ability to spend with family, all of that. But just having control over your time is wealth.
What do you wish you knew before starting your own company?
It's very hard. It's like a lot harder than I thought it would be. But that's okay, because it's also very rewarding.
What are you dreaming about next?
Honestly, all this AI stuff is so extraordinary. I know there's so much potential for it to transform our lives for the better and make us more productive, make us healthier, wealthier, happier. Like there's so much. And it's just such an incredible moment to be living in and building in.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the conversation. I could talk to you for so much longer about so many big ideas. But for those who are looking to continue to follow your journey, where can they find you and Real World?
Yeah, well, you can find us at realworld.co and on the App Store, both iOS and Android, just real world automated adulthood. And then myself, I'm Instagram Genevieve Arbelair or Twitter/X Genevieve Arby.
Thank you so much.
That was Genevieve Belair, founder and CEO of Real Worlds. If you want to check out the app, you can download it in the App Store. And as always, if you love this episode, subscribe to Dreaming Big wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. And remember, success isn't about having all the answers. It's about being brave enough to ask the right questions. Thanks again for going deep with me today. And remember, keep dreaming big dreams. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'll see you next time.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.